Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, people are reacting to Tuesday's show about trading Anthony Davis. They either think we're brilliant or stupid, which means we probably are doing something right. Talk about your reaction next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. No matter how you get your podcasts, where you get your podcasts, always free, never behind a paywall, and readily available, Andy. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to subscribe and get the podcast a little bit early. Most nights we got it up a few hours before you can get the audio product. So thanks again to our friend Damen Rangula. Tuesday's show, Andy. A little bit of controversy, I suppose. It was a divisive topic, talking about Anthony Davis. And speaking of divisive things, we'll get into some Russell Westbrook news in a moment. It tells me something about, I think, where the Lakers are and how difficult it is to figure out the right path. That people either thought we were spot on for exploring the concepts of trading Anthony Davis, or they thought we were absolute morons for exploring that same concept.
Well, there's no easy solution to this because, I mean, frankly, if it was, the Lakers would likely be in a better, more tenable position one way or the other. Like, they would either be in a really good place where it felt like, all right, last season went bad, but if you play the averages, they are clearly still one of the best teams in the league. There's plenty of evidence of that. There's not that much reason to panic. Let's just take last season for what it was, you know, a historic failure, and as Kendrick Perkins would say, carry the hell on. Or you would say, this has clearly run its course. We know the Lakers hate to rebuild, but every now and then you have to make those type of steps. Hopefully it won't take that long. You try to use the advantages that the Lakers have always had in terms of attracting stars, or use their actual talents at spotting young talent, whether you're talking about high in the first round, low in the first round, second round, undrafted. This is far and away this front office's best skill. Either way, it would seem like the path is obvious. The Lakers don't have an obvious, easy path. Therefore, this is going to seem like something that would elicit mixed reactions.
And, you know, it's funny, like, you know, you mentioned last season and, you know, going into the summer of Westbrook as it became, there was a sense of, like you say,
like, okay, the summer of George, disappointing.
There was that sense of, okay, 21-6. Okay, if Anthony Davis doesn't get hurt, the Lakers had a chance to beat Phoenix in that opening round, and then we'll see what happens. And look, I mean, you know, Suns showed themselves in the playoffs again this year to be at least beatable in the sense that they were beaten. So, you know, it was much easier to play that game of it's if LeBron doesn't get hurt, if guys don't get hurt, like there was tangible evidence. This season had zero, like you said, tangible evidence that that the team would have been good. But the problem is figuring out where to go next. Like, we got this comment from
Really quick. It's not just that the team is in a bad place in terms of roster construction, exactly what you do to try to make it better because you have so few assets. You have to figure out the Westbrook problem. It's also LeBron and Anthony Davis both dealing with recurring health problems.
Correct. Yeah.
Which is why
we were exploring that concept of trading AD in the first place.
Right. But it needs to be made clear. It's not simply just the idea of where the roster is at. Would it be better to try to retool something or, you know, dangle AD as, you know, somebody that could fetch someone better or whatever? It's, can you keep building around these two guys who over the last three seasons, LeBron's three, AD two of the last three, LeBron three of the four, I guess, you've had significant injuries to deal with. Mm-hmm. And in the case of LeBron, he's only getting older. In the case of AD, this has kind of been AD's career.
Yeah, and the title season, and I'm not, and we're not asterisk people. We're not Pat Beverly, you know, calling it a bubble title and all that, and debating JJ Redick about it. But it, in terms of replicating that,
the bubble environment that doesn't matter because it was so, I guess, easy without your fans. Yet the Clippers folded.
I was about to say, yeah,
up 3-1.
If it was that easy to win, Pat Bev or every other team criticized, why didn't your team win it?
It's,
you know, I mean, the whole, if it was that simple and just meaningless.
I guess if Patrick Beverly's argument is, you know, if Clipper Nation had been there for us, that would have been the difference for us versus every other team in the league, because Clipper Nation is just that and strong.
As the kids might say, Andy, GTFO with that. You know, I mean,
come on, dude.
No, all the way.
I mean, look, they got some loyal fans. I'm not trying to discount certainly anybody who's stuck with that franchise for, you know, multiple decades, you got a hearty constitution, but my God, come on.
I got dudes with, you know, red suit, white, blue suit. I mean, you know, I mean, Clipper Dell's been at it.
Somebody out there owns a Clippers Cherokee Parks jersey. I mean, there are loyal folks out there, but the idea that
Cherokee Parks owns a Cherokee Parks
jersey. If they had been able to compete with Clipper Nation getting their back, get the F out of here,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, all the way. So, but the issue about that season isn't that the title itself is BS or not worthy. It's that you can't replicate it. You can't take lessons from that season and be like, oh, well, if we just do it. Because, you know, God willing, there's not going to be another four-month break between your last game and, you know, and the playoffs, basically. So that's the part that makes it difficult to replicate. But like this comes from Joshua Harrington on the YouTube channel. He says, I do think floating this idea, again, the idea of trading Anthony Davis, is absurd. Not that I don't understand why you guys are talking about it, and I don't blame you for coming to the reality that trading AD is something that could happen or may just be a necessary bad choice. But to me, there's nothing that gets you a better yield than a healthy AD and LeBron. For one, AD's trade value is too low to get that type of healthy prime and super in prime superstar to replace his production. And two, LeBron and AD fit so well on the court that it's absurd to think about separating them. I mean,
yeah,
I don't.
Sure,
it's not. It's, you know, but let's talk about this, because he's not wrong, and that and that's what makes this so flipping challenging. And I mean, I think ultimately, by the way, they're not going to trade Anthony Davis and they're not going to trade LeBron.
No, I don't think they will either.
But it is very difficult to rebuild in a way that gets you something that is better than LeBron and AD as a core. It just is.
If you are confident at all that LeBron and AD will play 60-ish games individually, 60-ish games together, something like that, you know, maybe 70 together, 60 individual, whatever. If you're confident of that, then yeah, you're not going to trade them. Of course,
particularly in the springtime. Like they do need to be available in the spring.
Right. It can't be front loaded.
No, it's got, you know, 60 and it all stops in March is problematic.
Right. But yeah, I mean, if you're confident that's going to happen, if you feel good about it, of course you wouldn't trade them. My point, because I've been more of a driver of this conversation than you, Brian, is I'm just losing confidence that that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it feels impractical to me to continually build around two stars with these type of concerns, particularly when one of them is LeBron, has roughly a billion miles, you know, under his belt and is doing unprecedented things this far into his career and these type of responsibilities. He really needs somebody that is reliable to be that number two. But again, if you think it's going to happen, of course you wouldn't break
or
them
could
up.
Or the odds are good enough. Like,
right. Yeah, you wouldn't break. They're right. Great together. Nobody's disputing this.
Yeah. Oh man. It's a little like Fetch, Andy. They're trying to make Fetch happen, and it is not easy. All right, let's talk about other things that got Lakers fans all up in arms this week. Russell Westbrook and a report from Sam Amick at The Athletic. That got people going. We'll talk about it next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I'm always looking for different ways to improve my health, you know, whether more vitamins, improve my immune system, better digestion. Man, as you get older, the digestion thing, ugh. It's at the risk of TMI.
What he's telling you, listener, is that Andy spends a lot of time on the toilet.
Yeah, because I spend so much time on the toilet, I don't have time to improve my health doing all these things. And that's what makes Athletic Greens perfect for me. Just one scoop of AG1, either in a glass of water or in a smoothie, you get 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food sourced, superfoods, probiotics. Yeah. That really is helpful. And adaptogens all in one.
You just work your way out of this, all right?
And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply.
Plus all that time you get back.
Of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you need to do is visit.
Because you don't want to have to do that on the road.
Absolutely not. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NBA network. Again, athleticgreens.com/NBA network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Just a reminder, they paid for that.
Yeah,
good money.
Listened.
I think they did.
Yeah.
Look, the Anthony Davis thing is a thought exercise when it comes down to it, at least for right now, more than anything. It's a framing of how you think about the roster. It's
definitely a thought exercise. Right. They're not doing this.
It's possible. But like, you know, what would rebuild it? You know, is it trading Anthony Davis for 3 starting caliber players? Would the Lakers be better without Davis, but 3 legitimate starters to add around LeBron? And then you go from there. Like it's a legitimate way of thinking about it, inspired in part by how teams like Dallas have advanced in the playoffs with Luka and a supporting cast that makes sense. One trade that isn't hypothetical that everybody wants to see, and nobody seems to disagree on the idea of it being a priority, is moving Russell Westbrook. And that is why, Andy, some reporting this week from Sam Amick at The Athletic had everybody freaking the bleep out. Because the Lakers are talking about, coaches who need to know what they're going to do with Russ this year.
Per Sam's report, quote, "Yet though it remains unclear who will replace the fired Frank Vogel with Kenny Atkinson, Adrian Griffin, Mark Jackson, Darvin Ham, and Terry Stotts among the known candidates, we continue to learn about how Laker officials see their roster by way of the coaching search itself. More specifically, the notion of Russell Westbrook remaining part of their program is seeming more real all the time, despite the widely held belief that the Lakers would find a way to trade Westbrook before the start of next season. Sources say their coaching candidates have been asked to discuss how they would use him in their system during interviews. The takeaway for candidates, it seems, is that maximizing Westbrook's presence after the disastrous 2021-22 season is considered an important part of the job."
I noted earlier this week, Andy, at Cam Brothers on Twitter, because the reaction to this was
poor.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't focus group well.
It did not test well. At best, people were like, "Well, this is gamesmanship. Obviously, you want to make the league think that you're willing and happy, excited even at the prospect of keeping Russell Westbrook on your team, so you don't look desperate and you don't look like you will have to throw in those picks."
Four-dimensional chess, Brian.
Mm-hmm. All the dimensions.
Yeah, this might be like 5 or 6 dimensional what people are talking
and,
about.
And look, I mean, yes, you don't want to look overly thirsty in terms of trying to get rid of the guy. And to whatever extent, like, okay, sure. So maybe look, that's
this
a
is,
factor.
To whatever degree the Lakers think this actually would convince another team, and like, you know, as insular and arrogant as we've described this front office, I don't think they're that insular or arrogant. It's like you still go through the process. Like you still do the kabuki theater of this all, because that's just the way this stuff works, to whatever degree this actually is just trying to project narratives through the media.
Right. But I mean, this is one of those sort of Occam's razor moments where it's like, you know, so the answer is perhaps the most obvious thing, like treat it for what it is. And it's not that they don't want to trade Westbrook, and it's not that Westbrook doesn't want to be traded, because I think he does. But there is a legitimate chance that Russell Westbrook is going to be on the Lakers next year. And if he is, of course you need a coach that has a plan on how to use him. I mean, to me, it's, and I tweeted this out, you know, again, at Cam Brothers, it would be malpractice to talk to their coaching candidates and not bring up the idea of Westbrook playing for the Lakers next year and what to do with him and how you would use him.
Yeah. I mean, it's an acceptance that he may be on this team next year. So it's not even just a matter of making the best of this. It's like you want to make the most productive best of this. So Yeah, they should be asking what you would do with Russ, not because they're, you know, trying to enhance his role or rah-rah him internally, externally, sell yourselves on the idea of, you know, Russell Westbrook is still that dude. It's just you need a better path if he's going to be on this team. And if a coach has an interesting idea, a better approach, whatever, than what went on last year with Russ and this team and Frank Vogel, like whether you like it or not, and I don't like it, doesn't mean you shouldn't be looking for this. Like
you have to, nobody wants their house to burn down, but you still buy homeowners insurance. Like I am not planning on dying anytime soon. I have life insurance. Like you plan for things that you might not be excited about. That's part of being an adult. You know, I there are two questions that come out of this. I mean, I'm sure they're talking to a deal, like, you know, what would it look like if you didn't have Russ on your team? Yeah, there at least is some optimism that everybody can kind of pretend and start over with a fresh, you know, a coach with a fresh approach, you know, and just everybody can at least pretend like, hey, it's a new year and we learned some lessons and we're all going to do better this year. All of us, all the big three plus a new coach and all that. And you can talk yourself into that for sure. And the other argument, I guess, is just one that discusses whether or not if Westbrook isn't traded, are you better off sending him away before the season even starts? Is assuming he's not asking you to do that. If Russ isn't saying, I don't want to play here, send me away. Are you better off trying to make it work and then, you know, paying him to go away? I mean, there are plenty of fans who think you should just pay him to go away right at the beginning, because letting him on the floor, you're going to basically upend the season before it even starts.
I think if the team is so fragile that 3 weeks of Russell Westbrook before exiling him to wherever he lives in LA is going to submarine this team, guess what? Your team was pretty crappy to begin with. I mean, like if
it might be.
Right. But I mean, if you can't handle a month of Russell Westbrook, and sending him away doesn't excise whatever the hell problems he was creating, you know, hypothetically in this 1 month of the upcoming season, your team was lousy. Like it's just really that simple. Like I agree with you. If he's on this team, you should give it a try.
Right. Like there's one more, I think, compelling thing, and we'll get to some stuff with LeBron and how his vacation. God, he's got to be the worst guy to go on vacations with this time of year. How that's going. But there's one more reason you have to give it a try with Russ. And it's related to the question we were asking about Anthony Davis, and we'll explain it next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. Okay, they got the new birthday cake puffs out right now. And just picture, like, when you dip your finger into a plastic tub of that birthday cake frosting, and then, like, you eat it. It tastes awesome. And it's like, oh my God, frosting, junk food, amazing. And then you realize it was just 150 calories and you get 16 grams of protein. That's what it's like to eat a birthday cake puff from Built Bar. We just received ours. I'm not kidding. These are the best. These are the best ones that I've tried, and I've pretty much tried them all, and they're awesome. My daughter is really enjoying them, so they're great for kids, great for adults. She is yoked on top of it. She had one puff. And
she looks like that Wiggins meme now.
Oh, it's unbelievable. She is a walking gun show right now. And also, too, they're made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently. There's a lot of health benefits from it. So go to built.com to get these birthday cake puffs plus all the other ones. Go to built.com, use the promo code LOCK15, get 15% off your order. Again, promo code LOCK15. 15% off at built.com. I've got a yoked 11-year-old daughter. Very exciting.
This episode is also brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's impossible for your local auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. And why endure pointless or even sometimes intimidating questioning and waiting there while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the stuff that they want to get rid of, not necessarily the stuff that you need for your car? Andy, you have a computer that you carry around with you. You also have one that you don't carry around with you at home. It's called your computer, but the other one's called your phone. And with both of them, rockauto.com, at home and in your pocket, you save time and money when you use Rock Auto. It's a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. And they have everything you need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet for your car, not your house. We encourage you to go over all the things that you think your car might need and then go to Rock Auto and get all that filled. Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, right locked on in the How Did You Hear About Us box, so we know, or they know, that we sent you. Amazing selection.
We'll find out, though, and we appreciate it.
All your parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. It's been an interesting show for Reeds. But anyway, so LeBron James did a Q&A this week. I got on Twitter and just said, fire me out some questions. And when you're LeBron James and you do a Q&A, it really brings out a lot of people. And Dez Bryant was asking questions, and Tom Brady was asking questions, and Damon Jones was asking questions. Like, the celebrities come out for a LeBron James Q&A.
Those are his friends, Brian. Like, I mean, really, it's like, it's the equivalent of if I did a Twitter Q&A and just, you know, one of my buddies that nobody here would recognize his name, he just asked a question. Like, it's the Trump. Same thing. I mean,
hey,
like,
it's Trump.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Brady is just like a casual friend of LeBron James's. Like, that's his boy, Tom. That's all it is.
T-Dog. So he didn't really say anything, I think, particularly interesting. I mean, he talked about how the fire is still burning and gave a list of, I thought, five relatively unimpressive movies as his five favorites. I don't care who he'd want to play 2-on-2 with or whatever it is. Like, just those things don't interest me. More interesting is just how antsy he seems to be right now, with the playoffs continuing and he's still on vacation. Like, this vacation's been even longer than the last one.
I have no idea if he's still on vacation, but I remember like a week or so ago, I commented about this, like, because he was doing something on, oh, he was live tweeting from games. He was live tweeting from playoff games. And I'm sitting there going, like, dude, your family is with you. Like, this rare opportunity for you and Savannah and the children to all be together. And like, I get that you're going to keep your eye on the NBA playoffs because this is what you do. And LeBron's a legit basketball junkie, but like, it feels like they are probably off in a different part of the resort or whatever, doing something while LeBron's sitting in his room, firing off observations about first round matchups. Like, it's gotta get really annoying to them.
I'm sure it is. And I will say this, like, look, there's no question that the guy needs a certain amount of attention. It's not unusual for people in his position and who have sort of like been in this spotlight since he was like 12. I do think, though, it is a good sign, like, when he says, you know, the fire is still burning, I'm still, you know, hella motivated and all that stuff. I do believe him when you see kind of like how much it does seem to bother him that he's not a name that you can put in this conversation, like the big one, right? Is who's the best player left in the playoffs and all these like talking points that happen. And you obviously can't put LeBron anywhere in that conversation.
He was the best player that missed the playoffs, though.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That's exciting.
It is. Yeah, there is that. But I mean, like, that stuff bugs him. So I would say probably the first offseason that the Lakers don't make the playoffs, which, by the way, could be next offseason, that he just looks up and he's like, whoops, I missed the entire first round. I got to catch. Like, that's when he needs to retire, because clearly he's just stopped paying attention, doesn't care, which is fine. It's hard to sustain. I will say that's one thing that has me buying what he's selling about still being very motivated to be very good.
Yeah. I mean, as much as there were a lot of Laker fans that were somewhere between skeptical and aggravated watching him during the season when it felt like he was just nakedly trying to pursue scoring title or just rack up these numbers for the eventual passing of Kareem. And for what it's worth, you and I both said, A, we get him wanting those records, and B, the Lakers actually needed him to score those points if they even wanted a chance of winning. And very often that
who else was going to score those points?
Right. I mean, as much as
you, yeah. Lieutenant Weinberg, nobody's scoring those points.
I mean, look, as much as it certainly LeBron expended some energy that was not available defensively sometimes at all, the flip side is nobody was scoring. Like, and it's not like LeBron could have solved those defensive issues themselves. It's like he kind of had to pick a lane in some respects. There is a trickle-down effect from those defensive lapses. I'm not saying they don't matter. I'm just saying this team was not in a beggars-can-be-choosers position. Right.
Basketball particularly, so much of the conversation about who that best player is shaped by the playoffs. It's shaped by these moments, and like Jimmy Butler and what he did, to the Celtics in game one, and like the way that people reform their image and their careers and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, Jokic and this incredible, debate and people were running their hair on fire because of, Jokic isn't going to advance far enough, but he won an MVP, like all this stuff. LeBron's not even part of any of it. What would you have asked him? Because, like, the questions were fine. The answers were fine. If you could have asked him anything, what would you have asked him?
What is the biggest thing he learned? Here's just the beginning of the questions I had. What is the biggest thing he learned from every NBA coach he ever had?
Ooh,
like, including, like, guys that he won titles with, a guy like David Blatt, who he clearly despised, or like a Luke Walton, who I think he was just totally indifferent to. Like, I think it would be really interesting to hear, like, what's the biggest thing he got from each one of those guys?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I'd be interested in that answer for sure.
I would love to ask him about his aspirations in Hollywood as an actor. Like, is he looking for a career like a Dwayne Johnson or a Jim Brown, like those type of athletes turned actors who played a wide variety of roles? Or is he just looking to play LeBron James? Like, I'd be curious.
He's done twice now, correct?
Yes. Two or three times, something like that. But, I mean, he did voice work in a kid's movie. Was that
Snowflake? I was thinking Space Jam and Trainwreck.
Right, exactly. Like, I'm curious to see, because, he's a legit Hollywood mogul in the making right now. He's got, like, a Friday the 13th remake coming out. Like, he's doing a lot of stuff with Spring Hill, but I'm curious what he actually wants to do as an actor. Does he ever actually do cooking for Taco Tuesday? Like, I'm not judging him one way or the other. If he has, his wife do it, if he orders out, if the kids do it, whatever.
I think they have a chef.
Or if they have a private chef. I don't know. I have no idea. But I would love to know, like, does LeBron actually do anything for Taco Tuesday other than film it? Does he have a hidden talent? Is there something that LeBron is really good at that nobody knows about? Like, it could be like a really stupid skill, whatever, but he's genuinely good at that thing. Like, your son, your oldest son, just picked up balloon animals.
Balloon animals, yeah.
He's really good at it. He's become very good.
YouTube can get you good at stuff pretty quickly.
Right.
I can tie cherry stems in a knot with my tongue.
Yeah, I mean, that's useless, but kind of cool. Why haven't you just accepted reality and shaved your head? You and I have both been through this and recognize that it is not an easy transition to concede in terms of, like,
especially for me, I was 12.
Yes, in terms of necessity, like, it's like the way a drug addict at some point has to realize that dabbling with cocaine lifestyle just isn't working. Like, these things are not easy to reconcile, but, like, it's time you know, with that hairline.
Yeah, it is.
It's time. And the more he's letting this reality not sink in, frankly, the worse it's looking. And then finally, if LeBron could punch one NBA player, past or present, and off the top of my head, I'm guessing he chooses either Jay Crowder or goes back in time and punches a young Phil Jackson who wouldn't even understand why.
What about Solomon Hill?
You know what? I don't think Solomon Hill. I think with a little bit of time and distance, LeBron could recognize, like, Solomon Hill's diving for loose balls. Like, that's how he stays in the league. Like, Jay Crowder is often just being, you know, an a-hole. No, he's made enough money. He doesn't have to do some of the stuff that he does. And he doesn't like Phil.
That's true. Phil seemed to be choosing the next coach and keeping Westbrook, so maybe they need to get along.
Okay, we're going to discuss the whole Phil with Westbrook thing sometime this week, because that's another thing that I think people are, if not...
People are freaking out. I mean, yeah. The whole thing. The whole, all of this.
I want to discuss this at some point.
Okay, well, we can. We've got time. I had two questions. The first was, do you think it is fair that Space Jam got multiple Razzie Awards this year? I didn't think it was that bad a film.
I think it was good. I think it may have just gotten nominations. I don't think it actually won anything.
Okay, multiple nominations for Razzies. I thought it won, but I could be wrong. Either way, it is not an honor to be nominated.
Oh, it is not.
And then my last question would be, I would like to know, because LeBron is a savant who remembers literally every moment that happens to him on the floor all the time, always. I would like to know the exact moment where he realized that the Westbrook thing just wasn't going to work. Like, where did he realize that I had made a huge mistake? I would like to, because I suspect it was like the third practice. I don't think it took long. And I would love to know when he realized that and then what his thoughts were.
I stand corrected. It won 3 Razzies, including one for specifically
worst movie.
Two for LeBron. He won worst actor and he won worst screen combo, LeBron and any Warner cartoon character. So yeah, bad.
I didn't think it was that bad. I didn't think it was good. No, I assume he'd be laughing all the way to the bank. This thing did really well.
Yes, it did.
So, all right. Well, we know we're going to talk about Russell Westbrook and Phil Jackson going forward. Keep those comments coming. We do like to use your comments on the YouTube page or at the iTunes page or at Cam Brothers on Twitter as get you guys involved in the show. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you subscribe for the video product. See everybody Thursday.